everybody. Welcome to episode 799 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and I have a couple of creators joining me today who are the writers for an upcoming Aftershock title. It's Mary Shelley Monster Hunter, and I have writers Adam Glass and Olivia Briggs joining me today. So it's a first-time project for Olivia. It's her first time in comics, so pretty exciting. And you'll be able to tell in the interview just how excited she is. And Adam really sings her praises. You know, Adam, who's been around for a long time, he talks about how he got into comics kind of through the back door, worked in Hollywood, movie and TV, film first. So a really talented duo here. And I've had a chance to check out the first issue of Mary Shelley, and I found it to be very enjoyable. It's fascinating, and you'll hear Adam and Olivia talk about just how much of a pioneer Mary Shelley was. She basically invented the genre of horror, basically, so certainly science fiction horror, which you can kind of categorize Frankenstein as. So gothic horror, science fiction horror, a whole new genre, and really a pioneer, as I said, very much a feminist, and dealt with some pretty terrible things in her life in terms of hardship. So certainly a historical figure that deserves our respect. And I love that this title is going to be shining a light on her. You know, obviously a lot of this is fictionalized, and this theory that she didn't just write the story of Frankenstein's monster but lived it is an interesting one as well. So hope you all enjoy the interview, and hope you go and pick up Mary Shelley Monster Hunter from Aftershock, coming out this month on the 17th of April. Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is an Aftershock Monday episode, and today I have the pleasure of welcoming a couple of creators on the show. One is returning, I think, for the third time, and the other, it's her first time on the show. So we want to welcome both of them, both Adam Glass and Olivia Briggs. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Olivia's first. There you go. See? I'm classing us up, dude. I'm bringing some class to this with Miss Olivia Briggs.
Yeah, we could always use more class around here. That's for sure.
Oh, jeez, that's a tall order. Good thing you can't see me right now.
Well, the reason we're having you two on is you have a new title coming out from Aftershock. I got to check out the first issue. It's Mary Shelley Monster Hunter, and you know, Mary Shelley, absolutely legendary, Frankenstein's monster, a classic piece of literature. It's always been one of my favorite monsters, probably my favorite, actually, now that I think about it, much more so than like Dracula or the Mummy or the Wolfman. For some reason, Frankenstein, maybe I saw it first when I was a kid and it always spoke to me. The idea of, you know, bringing something to life, it's absolutely classic. So you two, just as excited to bring this story to Aftershock and to readers.
Olivia, you go first. I'm just going to follow your amazing lead.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, yes, of course. We're very excited. I mean, from the moment that Adam brought this project up to me, it's been one that we've been very excited about, mostly because, you know, this woman, not only did she write this incredible book, but I think what people don't realize about Mary Shelley is that she originated a genre. You know, horror, and I mean specifically sci-fi horror, absolutely did not exist before Mary Shelley wrote this book, which is part of why, in addition to the subject matter, it was such an incredible hit. And not only that, but this girl, I mean, she was 19 years old when she wrote this book and when she conceived of this fantastic tale. So what's most exciting for us about bringing this story to readers is that we're putting Mary Shelley at the helm of her own story and putting her front and center. And she's never been front and center before. In fact, most people don't really know anything about this pretty incredible young woman. So that's what particularly incites me and Adam about, you know, getting this story out there, is getting Mary Shelley's story out there.
Yeah, and I mean, to sort of jump in also and add to that, I think what was really great about her that a lot of people don't realize is that she was also really ahead of her time. You know, she was a feminist in the early 1800s, which could not be easy. You know, this was a time where if, like, you know, a woman complained. They were like, she's hysterical. Put her in the institution, you know. And she was a proud feminist. And she was also, a world traveler, you know. She and her lover, Lord Byron, and an open marriage, you know, free love.
Percy
almost like
Shelley.
Percy,
as far
I'm sorry,
as we know,
Percy,
she never
Lord
slept with Lord Byron. She could have slept
Byron,
with him, you know,
well,
open marriage.
Maybe. Yeah, Lord Byron was with them too, and her sister, half sister, was with her. And I mean, they just were so ahead of their time. They were rock stars, like during their time. This is the early 1800s. This is like a really pure society, and they're going around with these ideals that just were just so advanced. So even though it's a story that takes place in, like, you know, we keep saying in like the early to mid 1800s, like, you know, it's a time where, like, you know, there's such modern things happening, and a lot of it's because of Miriam, the way she thought and the way she lived her life.
Yeah, it's fascinating to me. And like I said, I really enjoyed the first issue. So we're going to dive into the story a little bit more. But before we do that, I just want to give you a chance, Adam, again, to remind everybody who you are and some of your previous work. And then Olivia, I always have to ask when someone comes on for the first time about any history they had growing up with comics, and we'll give you a chance to talk about any previous work as well. So actually, you know what? Let's start with ladies first, right? So let's start with you, Olivia. History with comics. How did you discover them? Did you go up reading them? That kind of thing. And maybe even a little bit of how you got into becoming a creator.
Sure. My history with comics is fairly minimal, mostly considering the fact that when I was growing up, there wasn't a whole lot for little girls. But I loved the Archie comics.
Getting into Betty and Veronica. And that was really, my father has saved them all. I have a whole crate at home. But that was really, all I was, exposed to. I think, you know, mostly because, yeah, the comics were very male dominated, and the female sidekicks, at least as far as my parents were concerned, were a little bit too scantily clad and for their young daughter's eyes. So that was my first, that where my kind of interest in comics was born. And then I have been a writer. Oh, God,
could I ask one question? Were you Betty or Veronica?
Of course.
You were both?
I'm a brunette. I was always
you went hair
Veronica.
Color.
And
okay.
I did, and also because I had a best friend growing up who was a blonde, and she was the nice one. So,
perfect.
So I got to be the bitchy brunette, which made me happy, at least for the time being. I've gotten much nicer since then. But, yeah, so, you know, I spent much of my life writing since I learned how. And then I, you know, but I kind of did a bunch of different things in entertainment. My father was in theater, and I knew that's where I wanted to be. And then I kind of realized by doing a million different things in entertainment that writing was the one thing that made me the happiest. And so I went back to grad school and got my MFA in dramatic writing. Ended up coming back to LA in part, large part, because of Adam, who got me a nice fancy job working on Criminal Minds Beyond Borders back when that show was on the air. And then, you know, from there I went on to work on the arrangement, and I wrote for two seasons on that show for E. But what's so great about comics, you know, not every story that a writer comes up with is necessarily conducive to film or television, or it's that, you know, the idea needs some time to grow and breathe and become what it is in, you know, comic book or graphic novel form. And then you can present it to the world and say, see, wouldn't this make a great TV show? Which is, you know, the great thing about Mary Shelley Monster Hunter. So I was, you know, Adam and I started talking about this. Is it like almost a year ago now? Not even a year. This has happened really fast. And he brought up this idea and said, do you want to get into comics? And I'd actually had several ideas that I thought would be great for comics, but I didn't know the first thing about how to write them. And so immediately I was like, yes, teach me everything you know. So yeah, that's what we did. And this is my first foray into the comic world. And it's been a fantastic experience, particularly with Aftershock. They are very, very supportive of their artists, and all of our, you know, kooky, wackadoo ideas. And yeah, it's just been, it's been an absolutely marvelous experience. And then you get to see it come to life. It's like instant gratification. You know, it's like, it only takes a couple months, and then you have this incredible artist who has, you know, put this whole thing together for you that you then get to enjoy. And it's like, yeah, there's my story, man. So it's been really great. And I'm very, very grateful for Adam for introducing me to this world.
Yeah, that's two things.
Wow, she said it just the way I wrote it, by the way. I just want you to know that that was perfect, Olivia. Yeah,
two things you said there, Olivia.
That following along in my script here.
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, so two things you said there, Olivia, that I hear a lot from writers that come over from TV or movies. First of all, you get to write as big as you want. You know, you kind of alluded to that. You don't have to worry about production values, you know, special effects, that kind of thing. And the other thing is it happens so fast compared to like movie or TV, you know. You write something and 2 months later, it's there, the final product. So that's great. And I'll say, welcome.
You know, it can be hard for creators sometimes to really, you know, to get the people in the industry to understand why this idea of theirs is so great. You know, and especially when there's so much money involved. But if you do it first as a comic book, and then you say, here, look, see how great it is. And then they're like, oh, yeah. So it's like, it's a great platform for so many reasons.
Yeah, exactly. See, people are reading it. People are loving it. Now you get it, right?
Exactly.
All right, Adam, I don't know if you can follow that up, but remind us of
I was going to say, after such a sweet story, I'm going to sound like such a douchebag. Like, I'm like, I've done 122 comic books. I've, you know. let me just say this. I have loved and read comic books for 45 years. That is true. Very true. I started reading comics at 5 years old. Actually, I was four, so I'm lying. It's been 46 years. And I was very lucky. I had a neighbor, Eddie Pagan in the Bronx, who used to give me his time. He was like an older kid. I used to bother all the time. Eddie, wherever you are, thank you. And I started reading comics, and I just have loved them my whole life. And, you know, since I started reading them in the 70s and all the influences and everything like that. And it's funny, my way into comics was sort of indirect, because if you asked me at 20, I would have told you I want to be a comic book writer, but I became a movie and TV writer first, and then actually was able to sort of work my way from my Hollywood connection into comic books, which is a double-edged sword, because even though I've been reading comics for 40-some years and writing them for another 12, I seem to always be the Hollywood guy, you know? So yeah, I mean, really lucky. I started out writing Deadpool before he became super popular, and Luke Cage noir, which was, you know, one of my favorite books that I ever did with my buddy Mike Benson. Then I wrote Flashpoint, Legion of Doom, probably the least favorite of all the Flashpoint stories. And then, you know, from that I did Suicide Squad, put Harley Quinn into the Suicide Squad. Wrote, I think, 21 issues of that, which was awesome. And then I did Rough Riders. I did Brick. I did The Normals. I'm doing Lollipop Kids with my son right now, which is just, you know, a dream come true. My 14-year-old son, who's now 15. And then finally, Teen Titans, which was my childhood favorite book. I love George Perez and Marv Wolfman's run. And to do that book is seriously a childhood dream come true. So I said childhood dream. It's a drinking game. Every time I say childhood dream, everybody have a beer. Cheers. So that's my story, man. Love comics. And also thank you for what you do, because I think that's really helpful for people to have a place to go. When I was growing up, there's no place to go and listen to comic books and talk to other people. You talk to other people you met in the candy store and got them off the rack. So I'm just blown away by the community and the world of comic books and what has been set up in the time in my lifetime. I'm blown away. In fact, so blown away that I'm going to go see Shazam when we get off the phone.
Oh, so, awesome.
Hey.
Yeah, so I appreciate you saying that, Adam, and I couldn't agree more. I mean, when I was a kid growing up reading them, first of all, it wasn't cool. They weren't at the center of pop culture like they are now, so you really didn't talk about the fact that you read comics. But if I could have just sat and listened to some of my favorite creators or the writers of the stories that I was reading and just kind of listened to them talk about their craft, I would have loved that. So listeners, this is why we do it, right? We want you to share with your friends and your family and let them know that, hey, there are a lot of great stories out there. And a lot of times when people say, oh, I don't really like comic books, it's because to them, comic books mean Superman or Spider-Man or Batman. It's superheroes.
I agree.
It's so much more than that with stories like Mary Shelley Monster Hunter. You know, here you are sort of mixing this classic horror story of Frankenstein with the true life story of Mary Shelley. So, Olivia, why don't you give us kind of the elevator pitch of what Mary Shelley Monster Hunter is all about?
Sure. Gosh, the elevator pitch.
Gotta perfect
it. I don't know if I can be that concise. But Mary Shelley Monster Hunter is about Mary Shelley. And the story kind of brings us to the beginning and actually the inception of, you know, how Mary Shelley came up with the idea for Frankenstein. And what you discover pretty quickly in the story is that Mary Shelley didn't just write Frankenstein, she lived it. I think that's probably the most elevatory that I can get. And the journey is really fun. So we're putting, like I said before, we're putting Mary Shelley at the center of her own story. She very much becomes a part of bringing this Frankenstein's monster to life. And then, of course, you know, everything goes south and she ends up spearheading the effort to then destroy this creature that she helped create.
Yeah, and to add something to that, you know, what I like about it, and we've seen this a lot where people take sort of literary characters and characters, say, Abe Lincoln, vampire, that has nothing to do with Abe Lincoln. This actually has organic, and has to do with Mary Shelley's life. So, you know, the stretch of it is, I think, not as much, and I think sort of also helps us take this thing that's woven into the fabric of our society, which you even talked about earlier, which is Frankenstein, and sort of allows us to sort of reintroduce it to a whole new audience, which is, you know, what we do. Is our job is like, I always say this, even when I'm writing Teen Titans, I'm not writing for me. I'm, you know, and guys my age, I'm trying to find a new group of kids that, like me, will be inspired, but we're writing, and young people who dig it. So hopefully, you know, some people read this and it gets them to sort of want to check out more about Mary and her history, and also possibly get to even the Frankenstein book.
Yeah, and the other thing that's cool about it is, you know, you mentioned Rough Riders earlier, Adam, and I love it when you take these historical characters and you kind of, you know, pull from actual events, but then you weave in some fiction, because like you said, it can get people interested in actually exploring, you know, the history and this. It's all story, right? We love story, and some of the greatest stories aren't fiction stories, they're nonfiction stories. They're the stories of these historical figures.
Agreed, 100%. You know, one of the best things that I've had happen to me a few times, and Rough Riders is one of those books, is they'll have English teachers just come to me at a Comic-Con or reach out to me through social media and say, I use this, you know, or history teacher, I use this in my class as an example, and got the kids into it, and thank you. And it's like, that's awesome. I mean, you know, like, you know, if you can touch
that
somebody
awesome.
And have that thing, you know, it's like, that's super awesome. So, yeah, I hear you. I love doing that.
Yeah, and I mean, with this book in particular, what Adam and I did, you know, Mary Shelley, in addition to being this pioneering, amazing, extremely brilliant woman, she experienced a ton of loss in her life, like devastating loss. Very, very hard to imagine how she survived, but she did. And so we've taken all of those events in her life and woven them into the story. So, you know, for all the deaths that Mary experienced in her life, we're re-explaining them kind of under the guise of, you know, what history told you was wrong, this is what really happened. But it's all informed by her actual life story and a lot of her emotional journey and the relationship that she had with her family and the love she had for her deceased mother. So all of that is very much a part of this, and we'll hopefully, you know, get lots of people stoked about who Mary Shelley really was.
So that's interesting that you say that, Olivia, because it's a question I was wanted to ask you about. You know, you've written for a lot of TV shows with fictional characters, and now you're writing a story that's fiction, but it draws on the history of a real character. Do you take a different approach when it's somebody who is actually a historical figure when you're talking about the ideas of the story versus someone that you've made up whole cloth, or is it just storytelling and it's more closer to a similar approach?
I mean, I think every new story requires a different approach, right? Slightly different. But I mean, I think something that all writers do, whenever you get an idea, something that you want to write about, at least for me, I always start with research. Not only does it make you a more informed writer, but it also makes your job a lot easier. You don't have to pull everything out of the ether. Some things are there for you, and your research can become a framework that can guide you through the creative process. And it's very, very useful and helpful that way. Some people think it's a drag. It's really, really not. It's very enlightening. So with something like this, that historical framework can be even more of a guide. And it's like, it's so thrilling when you start exploring the life of someone that you're going to write about, and you start finding, especially when, you can fictionalize so much of it. It really gives you great creative license. But also you want to pay homage to this amazing person. And it's just so thrilling when you can read things that they've written and research things that actually happened in their lives. And I think it was a choice that Adam and I made to actually use the events of Mary Shelley's life, and particularly the order in which people in her life died, as a framework for this. And it really just helps the process along. And anything that you can grab from someone's actual life, it just enriches your story so much. So I think, as opposed to, writing, purely fictional characters, this is a different type of research, but it's very, very engaging, and it enriches the project, and it makes it really exciting, because you really feel like, if Mary Shelley's spirit is hanging around, then she's digging what we're doing.
Yeah, and let me ask you, Adam, since you've done so much historical fiction with Rough Riders, like we were talking about, how was this story different for you with researching Mary Shelley, or was it different? Or did it feel very familiar?
Well, I knew a lot about Mary Shelley, and then to meet someone like Olivia, who knew even more, was awesome, because when we started talking about it, we would just sort of finish each other's sentences and just keep building on ideas and all those things. And I think this is important to say too. Look, I'm a writer who believes I can write anything, and again, through the research and all that stuff, but I definitely felt like I needed a female partner on this. I felt like Mary not only had a unique experience and a story that needed to be told, but I felt like, a woman's voice was really important to this story. And, again, I admired Olivia's writing. I knew Olivia as a human being, a person. I knew we could work together. We had done it before. So when I went to her, I knew not only she would be a great partner, but I also knew too what she was saying. She liked to do her research and really sort of be equipped and prepared. So, coming into it, we both brought some similar sort of passion for it. I like to sort of know everything so I could throw it away and use it at my disposal, let the plot and story take place, and then are there ways to sort of fit the history in. And, one of the great things about this was we really used a lot of Mary's life, what actually was going on in her life. Some of the action might not be true, but, who she is, both mentally and physically, and her being pregnant and her relationships and sort of all the way that goes down. That's all real stuff that was happening in her life. And like Olivia said, it's great because it sort of gives you a foundation to jump off from.
Yeah, and it's one of the
things. Is that right, Olivia? Did I say that the way I got that right? The speech that you sent me?
Perfect, on point. Word for word.
On point.
Word for word.
Okay. She's busily texting Adam his lines.
Texting each other.
Yeah, exactly. So, but honestly, that's
say this now.
That's one of the things. That's one of the things that so drew me into the story right from the beginning, right? Because we're talking about something that, as far as a story, it's classic. It's been around for a long time. Frankenstein's monster. Everybody knows kind of the basics of the story. But when you start talking about Mary Shelley as a pioneer, as this feminist, you know, that's an idea, you know, equality among genders. It's an idea we're unfortunately still struggling with, but I feel like we've made a lot of strides with that recently. And so now all of a sudden we've got the juxtaposition of this sort of classic literature, this classic story of Frankenstein, coming out at the same time, telling this story, Mary Shelley, Monster Hunter, at maybe the perfect time. Like, it's finally time to tell this story of Mary Shelley as this pioneer. So you're really bringing together almost two eras. And to your point earlier, Adam, introducing Mary Shelley to a whole new generation of readers, perhaps, who didn't realize this stuff about that. Can you speak to that a little bit, Olivia?
Yeah. You know, I think there's, it's current for a couple reasons. You know, I think, obviously Mary Shelley had to deal with a lot, in terms of being a woman, being a working woman. After Percy Shelley passed away, she was a single working mother, trying to raise, her son. So, you know, there's, you can see a lot that's very current about it, but of course, in the time that she was trying to do this, I think less than 2% of women worked or had jobs outside of the home. But not only that, you know, Mary's mother, Mary Wollstonecraft, is now regarded as the grandmother of modern feminism. And she wrote these fantastic books. She was an incredible free thinker in a time when you cannot fathom how this woman had the balls to say, we deserve equal treatment, women need to be educated, I don't believe in marriage, you know, these ideals about free love and not uniting with a man, not needing a man. It was totally, totally beyond revolutionary. And this is like late 1700s we're talking about. So Mary grew up with this influence, but of course, in the time that Mary grew up, her mother was not revered. Her mother, like most, you know, women in their times that are trying to change the playing field, she was regarded as a crazy person and a whore, because she had a child out of wedlock, you know? So, thankfully, you know, Mary grew up really revering what her mother taught, but she very much, you know, grew up in the shadow. And some people really thought that she was cool. And a lot of people really thought that she was nuts and she was this, you know, spawn of Satan. So that's the world that this woman grew up in, and spent her life in. And
get in line, Mary Shelley.
But you know, in this day and age, I think it's really easy for people. And I did this as a child too. I grew up in New York City, and I was always told that I could do whatever I wanted. And I never really saw that there was any sort of glass ceiling, or I never experienced any of what I perceived to be sexual discrimination. Now, when I'm older, I'm working in a male-dominated industry, and with the Me Too movement, I am myself starting to realize at the ripe old age of 35 that a lot of the things that I thought were acceptable that I grew up with were not acceptable at all. The ways in which I was treated. And even today, you know, to be asked on job interviews as a working mother if I had childcare. You know, there's a reason why those types of questions are embarrassing, but why they feel wrong, because they are wrong. And I think that women are waking up to an era, especially, I mean, I think millennials have been on this for a while. Thank God for them, because they're the ones telling the rest of us, like, you cannot believe you've been putting up with this shit for so long. But, you know, for those of us who are just kind of waking up to this new world, I think it's really important to remember not just how far we've come, but how far we have yet to go. And particularly, you know, with this new election cycle, we have tons of women stepping up from the Democratic Party. We have, you know, a Congress loaded with women in a way we've never seen before. I think politically this is very relevant. And I think it's important for women. And part of the reason why I was so enthralled by this idea and why I jumped on it was because there's not enough comics for women. And there's a lot of chicks out there. Like, you go to Comic-Con, there's tons of women, and they deserve to have content for them, too. So I feel like, you know, a comic book like this, which is tackling social issues, which you'll see more in book number two, we really kind of dig into the whole feminist bent of Mary Shelley Monster Hunter in the comic book. But it's important to have these stories for women. It's important to reflect on where we've come from. And, again, it's important to remember that there's still a fight to be fought. And if someone like Mary Shelley could do it in her time, we can certainly do it now.
Yeah, I mean, it's
preach.
Yeah, honestly, it's when you think about it, it's just...
I'll step off my soapbox now. Okay.
It's institutional. It's the way that these institutions have been created. It becomes a fabric of our reality. And yeah, it's not called out until sometimes those of us that have grown up with it, until somebody else comes along and points... Yeah, because exactly like you said, you go into a job interview and, you know, you have kids and they ask you about childcare. Well, are they asking the guys that have kids the same thing? Because it's the same, right? It's the same.
Of course they're not.
Yeah, and you know, it's like
And it doesn't mean the person asking is a bad person. It's just like what you're saying. It's institutionalized. Yeah. It's systemic. I went to a school called St. Anne's School, and I loved it, and I had a wonderful time. My father taught there, and you know, it was an incredible experience for me. And there were things about it that I pondered growing up. I said, you know, that teacher was kind of weird, and this person was kind of weird, and I wonder if that was okay. And then, you know, like, I think it was just this past week, this huge article came out about St. Anne's School in the New York Times talking about, you know, all of the teachers who had been sleeping with students and all of this, you know. So it's, you know, you don't realize what you're up against until years later sometimes. And some of these cases that were investigated in my school, you know, they go back to like, this is like the 70s through the 90s we're talking about.
Wow.
So years worth of this stuff, and now all of us who went there are like, oh yeah, that wasn't right. Like we shouldn't have had to deal with that, you know. So it's just it's interesting how, you know, with time perspective changes, but it's important to keep waking up to your reality because it's always changing and it's always being illuminated upon.
Yeah. When you get our age, you won't even remember any of that anymore. So. You're talking about school. I'm like, I can't remember that far back. I'm like,
give it a few more years.
15 years, it'll all be gone.
Yep, it does. The kids will wear it out of you. That's what'll happen.
Well, something.
Oh no.
Something else you said. Something else you said earlier, Olivia, that really struck with me because this is something I didn't realize about Mary Shelley, that she really was kind of the pioneer in terms of the first one to really write. Write gothic horror stories. And there's somewhat of an appeal to that, like something in us that likes to be scared. So have you written a lot of horror before, Adam? I don't think that you have, but am I mistaken in that aspect?
I wrote for 5 years on a little show that you might have heard of called Supernatural. Obviously has
a little which show.
Yeah, it's me being a complete dick. You might have heard of little show.
Do you have your pinky in your mouth while you're talking? Right
pinky
now?
In my mouth. It's Friday night. It's Friday night. I haven't even started drinking yet. So, but to that point, I have written a lot of horror. And actually, I make the argument, I read Mary Shelley, you know, later than most. I don't know why, but I know why. I went to public school in the Bronx. That's why. So I didn't read it till I was a freshman in college. And I really think it was part of what got me into horror, you know? And, you know, and here's the other thing, like, because, you know, at one point we were talking about werewolves and vampires, and we started to look up, and like, those books come 50 years later. Mm-hmm. Like, she doesn't only write the first, like, horror, like real horror popular story, it takes 50 years before like Bram Stoker's Dracula or, you know, werewolves or H.G. Well, any of those guys. So she's like leaps and bounds beyond everybody. Now, you can make an argument, the macabre horror of Edgar Allan Poe, but nobody's really doing what she does. I mean, she sort of stumbles upon something again, as Olivia said. She writes at 19, published at 20, which in itself, like, is amazing. And it's the book that I'll argue launches not just horror, but sci-fi horror. That's the other thing you can't forget about this. Her book's a sci-fi horror story, you know? It goes back to the foundation of, like, what we all as human beings can relate to is, like, you know, this idea of, like, playing God. And what happens if you play God? You know, we're told our whole lives you can't play God. Like, you know, like it's bad, it's dangerous. You know, the Bible tells it to you. You hear it growing up. And yet here this young woman writes the story about a man playing God, you know? And so it just comes back. Again, I think it's so raw and so natural. you know, the British, the BBC and all that, I had gone to UCLA and saw the play production that they had done, which was pretty amazing. They did it with Benedict Cumberbatch. Am I saying that right? I can never say his name right. And now, Olivia, correct me, please.
It's Cumberbatch, isn't it?
Yeah, Cumberbatch.
They did it with Sherlock Holmes and Johnny Lee Miller, the lesser Sherlock Holmes. And they turned around, and every night they would switch roles. One would play the monster, and the other would play Frankenstein, you know, Dr. Frankenstein. So it was pretty, you know, and it was amazing. If you ever get a chance, I think you could watch it online. And it was directed by Danny Boyle. And, you know, why does this story keep coming back to it? Why do we keep making movies about it every 20 years? Like, there's something about it that, again, as I said earlier, it's sort of woven in the fabric of who and what we are.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And Olivia, I wanted to ask you about the tone of the story, because we're talking a lot about big ideas here. We're talking about horror. We're talking about Mary Shelley as sort of a pioneer. And, you know, just in the title, right, Mary Shelley, Monster Hunter, you almost think, well, that could be like an action story. So are you trying to blend all those elements together, some horror, some action, some of that feel of really seeing Mary as this almost super heroic figure, or is it something simpler than that?
We're not going the superhero route with this, but I think, I mean, yes, we are blending a lot of those elements, but it's entirely character driven. So, you know, you're not going to see, Mary's not all of a sudden going to get, you know, superpowers and be jumping off of buildings. This is all coming from who she is. And like Adam was saying, you know, we start the story. She is, you know, not only a real human being, she's also a pregnant woman, who is, you know, embarking on this adventure. So it's, like I said, it's very character driven. It's brooding in that way. Not only do we explore, you know, Mary's relationship to the creature, and we have, you know, action and monster hunting and scares and suspense, but we also have, we're building relationships and exploring the relationships between Mary Shelley and Percy Shelley, her husband, and her stepsister, and her half-sister Fanny, and Lord Byron, and how these relationships all grow and change because of what they're up against. So in that way, it's a lot of fun, and it's really scary, and yes, you have action sequences, but it's very grounded in human.
Now,
yeah, and can I say something else? I think something else really quick. And I think the tone, like, which is, I think, what you're going for is, we're going for more Penny Dreadful, you know, than I think for a hero sort of action version of it, which is, it's, you know, imagine again, like, you sort of put in that world in the 1800s of a sort of, like, you know, underworld, things that are happening, and how would you handle that? You know, what would you do? And especially, and by the way, it's a very different time than our time. People thought very differently. They acted very differently. They actually, in some weird ways, were closer to heaven and hell and the idea that there was something out there. I think we now just, you know, most of us don't believe in any of that. Back then, superstition was alive and well. And so, you know, again, from a tone standpoint, I think, you know, if you ever saw Penny Dreadful, that's much more of sort of the tone and horror that we want to go for.
Now, you mentioned earlier, Adam, about the original story of Frankenstein really exploring these ideas of what was forbidden, playing God. Are those some of the exact same ideas you're looking to explore here? And also the idea of Mary Shelley as a pioneer? Or are you going to try to shift that a little bit and look for sort of a new angle on the Frankenstein classic story?
Well, I don't want to give away the ending of our book, which you read, but I think just by who helped create the monster and all those things is sort of our, we are playing God and doing all those things, but we're sort of trying to put it through a new and fresh lens. And the reason why this was done and these this character was created, this Frankenstein monster. But, you know, again, what's familiar but fresh, right? We're taking classic idea and we're just putting it through this, you know, for a better term of the word, this feminist, you know, lens, and we're trying to tell the story just slightly different, and, you know, build on what Mary had already created.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let me ask you, Olivia, since this is your first time working on a comic. So the art is, you know, 50% of the story. So this is the first time you're collaborating with an artist. So how has the process been for you working with your artist, Hayden Sherman, who is an incredible talent, has done some things at Aftershock before?
Oh, it's been great. I mean, it's like I said before, it's so amazing that you can write these, you know, you write these descriptions, you write this dialogue, and you have this idea in your head, and then it's kind of like, just within a couple months, you get to see the finished product in front of you, and it's like, oh my God, there are my people, you know? And it's really, really gratifying in a way that I wasn't really anticipating, because, you know, as an artist collaborating with other artists, you always want to encourage the artists that you're working with to bring themselves to the project. And I think that that's something that Hayden absolutely did. He brought his own style and his own take on things in a way that was really cool. And I really appreciate everything that he's brought to it. And it makes it exciting on a whole other level when you get to see that type of finished product, especially that quickly.
Yeah, Hayden's style is so absolutely perfect for this type of story, and I think the tone that you're trying to go for. So did you have him in mind, Adam, and it just worked out, or did Aftershock bring him to you? How did that happen?
You know, I have to give all the credit to the wonderful, amazing Mike Martz, who's like, surprise, I have the perfect artist for this. And he wasn't available, so we got Hayden. No, I'm joking. Joking. Hayden. Hayden. Hayden was the artist that he had chosen, and we took a look, and Olivia and I both agreed that he had the perfect style for this. And, you know, just to echo what she said, you know, he's just done an amazing job with this and brings, you know, such a style to it that I think does lend itself for great storytelling.
Yeah, I fully agree. I agree with everything you said there, Mike, because Mike Martz, I mean, Mike and I are of a similar kind of background, and so it doesn't surprise me that probably as soon as this story hit Mike's desk, he probably was thinking Hayden in the back of his mind already. So I completely agree. So listeners, be sure you pick up the first issue of Mary Shelley Monster Hunter. It comes out April 17th, and believe me, it is absolutely incredible. I love the mix of this fresh take on the classic Frankenstein story with real historical facts about Mary Shelley, and I'm learning so much about her that I didn't know. So as we wrap up here, let me just ask each of you, what's been your favorite part about the project so far? Olivia, we'll start with you.
Oh, I guess my favorite part, I grew up doing Shakespeare, lots of Shakespeare, and I was performing in Shakespeare shows, and I ended up directing Shakespeare in the Catskill Mountains with a bunch of amazing teenagers for 9 years of my life. And I think the most fun part about this project for me was to actually be able to employ some of that, Elizabethan English skills that I have been sitting on since. So it was really a joy to get to kind of, you know, comb through my own personal experiences and bring that to this comic book. That was really fun for me.
How about you, Adam?
Wow, we had totally different childhoods, Olivia. I was drinking and getting stoned and stealing from the local James Way.
I only went to the Bronx for Yankees game. Sorry.
That's right. There's a difference between Manhattan and the Bronx. To be honest with you, I think for me, you know, when you again, everything I say sounds so pretentious. When you've written as many books as I, you
there's that damn pinky again.
I just, that's the thing. Like, if this is going to come out, and it's going to be like, what a dick, Adam. What I was going to say is, the truth is, what I really have enjoyed about this, in all seriousness, is that to see a younger writer, you know, who's finding their voice, just get strong and stronger. Every book, everything Olivia wrote just got better and better and better.
Aww.
And, you know, she did a lot of heavy lifting on this. Like, I give her a lot of credit. So I couldn't have done it without her. So I thank her, and I thank Aftershock Comics, and I thank Hayden, our artist, and I thank you for having us on.
No, it's my pleasure.
Aw, thank you, Adam.
And knowing you the way I do, Adam, it doesn't surprise me at all that you say that. And I almost suspected that's what you were going to say working with Olivia, because her passion is so evident in talking about the project. And you'll learn this, Olivia, as you go along. And hopefully you do more comic work in the future. The more passionate a creator is about the product, the better the end product. Us as readers, that passion comes through. And you can tell that they're having fun doing it and that they love what they're doing.
Yeah, and you know, I want to echo something Olivia said. Yeah, and I want to echo something Olivia said earlier, but I think it's really important. And, you know, I've gone out and asked a lot of times for female collaborators, and I'm told all the time there are none, which, you know, I don't fully believe, but I think not enough women are getting chances. And so to have a platform to be able to help someone, you know, and I'm not saying this like, you know, like she helped me, like, you know, she came into this. I could not have done this story without her, but. You know, if you're out there listening and you are a creative person, you know, there are people out there. Let's give people chances and let's fill our stories with as many voices as we can hear, because they're going to bring an interesting slant to it and a different thing than maybe we will. So I really, really do appreciate Aftershock, not only believing in the project and me, but believing in Olivia. So
hear, hear. Anything
else you want to add? Thank you,
Aftershock. Anything else to add, Olivia?
No, I mean, just, you know, this has been, it's been a really, really wonderful process, and I'm very grateful to Adam, not just for, you know, bringing me into this world, but for bringing me into the world of television. He's been an amazing support, and I agree. I think, you know, more women should try and find their way into comics, because chicks are reading them, you know, so let's create more content for them.
Yeah, everybody loves a story, so let's get more stories out there for sure. Well, if people want to follow along on social media, let's start with you, Olivia. Where's the best place to follow along, know when these issues of Mary Shelley are coming out, and any other work you have coming out as well?
I'm on Instagram, and I'm Olivia C. Briggs, Olivia Cortero Briggs, which is my professional name, my mama's name on there. And aside from this comic book right now is the most prominent thing that's going to be hitting shelves in terms of my work. And, you know, other than that, just developing lots more stuff and working on another comic book with Aftershock, as a matter of fact. And so, yeah, stay tuned, as it were.
Great. Looking forward to it. And how about you, Adam? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, AdamGlass44. Got a lot more stuff coming up with Teen Titans. Lobo the Main Man is coming. That's been a lot of fun to write. He's going to come see his little girl crush. And so nice. Family reunion about to happen. And meanwhile, working on really cool TV show for National Geographic right now that will be coming out next year called Barkskins. Which is pretty awesome. So, look out for that.
Okay, listeners, don't forget, Mary Shelley Monster Hunter is out April 17th, so be sure to get down to your local comic shop as soon as possible. Let them know that you want a copy. As I've said many times on the podcast, the best thing you can do to help out your local comic shop is let them know you want something ahead of time. Then they know they need to order it, and the more voices they hear, the more they're going to order, so you make sure that you don't miss out on it. So thanks to Adam and Olivia for joining me, and we look forward to more work from Olivia to come. And Adam, keep up the great work on Teen Titans. It was great to have you both. Best of luck with Mary Shelley Monster Hunter. And Adam, I hope you enjoy Shazam.
I will. Thank you, buddy.
All right.
Everybody. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.